Ever since I was a kid, I loved hockey. Happy Gilmore. I might have to ditch the show and watch the rest of this.
No, no. You're going to watch Happy Gilmore on mute, and you're going to do a great interview with our next guest, Shane O'Brien, joining us right now. You know him as a former NHL defenseman. You should know him now as co-host of the Point Breakaway podcast. Very happy to have him on with us. Shane, how you doing tonight?
Good, boys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And 92, Ed Sprague, game two. Come on now. That was unbelievable. The glory days in the Jays. I love it.
See, I was a little kid for that.
Yeah, so I'll we'll just jump right into it. Obviously, Jays, tons of great memories. We'll just start there. We've been going over our greatest games of all time, and the Jays have had a few that jump out for you. What was kind of your memory of the bat flip game from recent memory, Batista against the Rangers? Yeah, there, I imagine you're a fan.
That was unbelievable. I was near the end of my career, so I was down in San Diego, back in the American League, and obviously I was downtown gas lamp in San Diego, watched the game, and. My boy Lupo was at the Rogers Center when it was going down. So I just remember like calling him or texting him and being like, is this as crazy being live as it looks on TV? He's like, Olbs, this place is going bananas. So the bat flip was unbelievable. And me and Lupo were talking the other night playing pool. The walk-off Joe hit 93 when he's like, Joe, you'll never hit a bigger one. I think that's my favorite Blue Jay memory from ever, though.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. It's impossible to go wrong with a World Series winning homer. I mean, we've got kind of spoiled in the last couple of years here. Like, I know Eddie had the big bomb in the wild card game, and you know, obviously Tulo's hit some big homers as well. It'll be nice when we have some baseball to watch and talk about. Obviously, everybody right now is kind of dealing with coronavirus, COVID-19. There's been a lot of talk about social distancing and keeping your space from people, and maybe you have to quarantine. So I guess my question for you is, out of all the guys you played with, maybe with someone in the NHL, maybe someone from the minors, is there one guy that you say, oh man, I really wish I was stuck with this guy for 2 weeks, or somebody who you say, oh man, I'm so happy I don't have to be stuck with this guy?
For a guy of players that I play with, you know, guys that jump out to me is, you know, Pierre Alexander Pronto, who was a Leaf for a little bit, PA we call him. He's a great guy. You know, we played together in the minors a long time, rode the buses together. We were roomies on the road. So we spent a lot of time with each other, so I'm pretty sure I could be stuck with him for 2 weeks. And then probably a guy who I wouldn't want to be with.
This is the one we want.
Alexei Smirnov back in the day, who was a Russian guy who, let's just say he didn't take the quickest showers. He was the longest showers. He was always in and out of the shower. He probably would have been the best guy to steal with. His hygiene wasn't exactly perfect.
All right, well, Shane, you couldn't have led me into my next question any better. So, I mean, I've played beer league hockey my whole life, and we've all had the guy on our team who's the shower guy. So, yep. Of all the teams you've played on, of all the guys you've played with, who do you think is the biggest shower guy in the NHL in your time?
Always jumping in there and always taking one. Great question.
No, just like the guy who loved it the most.
Who loved to be in the shower the most? I would have to probably go with my boy Scotty Upshaw. He was always just hanging around, either looking in the mirror in the bathroom after a game, doing his hair, jumping in the shower. He liked to have his shirt off and walk around naked a lot, so I'd probably go with Scotty Upshaw.
Oh, that's a classic character. No matter what level you've played at, it seems like there's always those guys. Shane, I just do want to switch gears, talk a little bit about hockey with you. Obviously, we heard you talking about the Jays there. You're from the area. Was there ever kind of a run in a chance of you getting a run with the Leafs, taking a look at that? Was that ever a possibility for you, or did that never really just come up?
Yeah, you know what? It was obviously a dream of mine growing up in Port Hope, Ontario, just down the road from Toronto. You know, grew up with, you know, Wendell Clark jersey and a Dougie Gilmore jersey, and was a diehard Leafs fan. So I remember when Berkey was the GM there, and obviously my boy Loops was an all-star for the team. There were some rumors, there was some rumbling that they were looking for a defenseman at the time, and my name was being tossed around. But for whatever reason, it didn't work out. But that was the closest it ever came. It was never very serious, but... I mean, every time I played at the Air Canada Center, it was just such a great feeling, a great barn, and to be a Leaf would have been a dream come true, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously understand that. What is your kind of perception of playing in a big market like that? You've played in other ones. You played in Vancouver. Obviously, we know how hot it can get there at times. Do you think that that scares some guys away, or is that something, a challenge most guys want?
Yeah, that's a great question. And my 2 years in Vancouver, and I've said this a lot, you know, we had good teams. We won our divisions both year. We're a great team at home. So I loved it. But, you know, the media was good to me. The fans were great. There was a buzz in the city because we had a good hockey team. So, you know, when you're playing in a great city like, you know, Vancouver or Toronto, when things are going great, you know, there's nothing better in the world. But, you know, when those are those dog days and things aren't going great, you know, that's when certain guys, you know, they can't handle the pressure. They can't handle, you know, getting ripped in the paper. But if you ask me, I think it's what players want. You want to play in the best market with the most attention, and that's when you play your best.
So you mentioned your time in Vancouver there, Shane, and I went back and was watching a few of your highlights from those times, and I saw a goal that was scored. You scored against the Chicago Blackhawks. I think it was Game 6, 08-09. Tie the game, made it 3-3. It was a nice little snip by it, not going to lie, top of the circle. But I got to ask you about the shift Darcy Hordichuk had to set that up. Threw behind the net. And then the puck got rimmed around, and he was somehow at the blue line and made like a between-the-legs drop pass. I mean, that must have been a fun goal to score. That was a crazy shift.
Hey, good for you. Great eye, because I don't often watch my goals because I didn't have very many, frankly. But that was, you know, that shift in general. Even some days I go back and watch it, and, you know, sometimes I'm back and forth with my dad, Pat, we'll watch it. And that's one of my favorite clips. And Hordichuk and Rippon. I mean, that shift was unbelievable by him. I think Hordy had three big hits. He killed Yalmosin behind the net, like old school, almost Wendell Clark style against the St. Louis Blues. Like, just drilled him behind the net, drilled the guy in the corner. The puck came up to Bjelica. He slid over, and Kyle Wellwood, he unbelievable screen in front of that Welly. And I just, boys, I got it through, and somehow it got by the old Boulin wall. But yeah, that was a great shift. And Hordy was the star of that shift. So good eye, man. He was a wrecking ball out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you kind of mentioned that, because it's something that we actually talk about a ton in this market, the idea of what a shift like that can do for other players. And, you know, the Leafs picked up a guy in Kyle Clifford who really, you know, he's one of the few guys on the team who really throws his weight around. What is it like to have that? Or I guess maybe I'll go the other way. Have you ever played on a team that kind of lacked that element? And what does it kind of take away from you if you don't have those one or two guys who are running around a little?
Yeah, you know what? I was lucky enough. First of all, I thought the Clifford pickup for the Leafs was a great pickup. Played against them a little bit, and honest, fight anyone. I just thought he was a good fit for the Leafs. But you know what? I was lucky. We always had, you know, one or two guys that, you know, you knew that they'd stick up for you. But, you know, for example, when you play against teams like, you know, Detroit back in the day, obviously they had a lot of skill, but you knew you could get away with the physical aspect. Teams like Carolina, teams like that, you knew you could, you know, get away with it, where if you wanted to play the Boston Bruins or the Flyers or whoever, you knew it was going to be, someone was going to be there to answer you. So I'm an old school guy, but I still think it's important to have guys out there that people on the other team know if you take a run at Matthews, at Marner, there's someone coming for you, and you're not going to get away with that.
So looking back on your playing days, and you played over, I think, over 500 games in the show, which is an impressive career, but I mean, you talk about Ovi, you talk about Sid, you talk about Malkin, but if there was one guy that sort of maybe you don't think of, that you're going into the night, you're looking at the game sheet, and you're saying, oh man, this is going to be a tough night, like a guy that you just kind of felt like not owned you, but were kind of scared of going up against, who would it be?
Yeah, you know what, for me, it was of all places too, it was the Edmonton Oilers, my days in Vancouver. We'd go into Rexall Place. You know, we were the better team, but we go in there. They have the fast ice in Edmonton, and Taylor Hall and Eberle and these guys, they'd be cheating the zone all night, just flying. So, you know, I had some long nights against the Edmonton Oilers, mainly Hall, Eberle, and those guys. Just, it was always hockey night in Canada, and for whatever reason, I'd come out of a game -2 or -3. Edmonton was not one of my favorite places to play, that's for sure.
So you're saying you didn't often get the hockey night towel after a -3 game?
I definitely didn't get the hockey night towel after the games at Rexall, that's for sure. But I remember when I got my first hockey night in Canada towel, boys. It was in Vancouver. Obviously, I played Tampa and Anaheim previously, so, you know, we didn't get too many hockey night in Canada games. I remember coming. I think I only got the sister son, but after the first period, they're like, yeah, Scott Oak wants to talk to you. I was like, what? And I remember texting all my boys after from back home, being like, boys, I finally got one. The old hockey night in Canada towel. That's when you know, you boys know, as kids from Canada, it's a pretty big deal.
Well, it's funny. We work with Jeff Merrick, who did the sideline interviews there for years, and he's told stories about guys angling for the towel, coming up to him in warmups and saying, you gotta ask for me. I'll do anything, whatever you need. I'll fight. I'll throw a hit. Like, it's funny. We think of it, it's a towel. Who cares? But, I mean, it really is such an honor for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, you know, it was something that just, it happened pretty quick in my career in Vancouver, so I didn't have to beg for it. But if it would have been near like the second year of my career, I didn't have one, I would have been cutting deals and warm up too, being like, "Hey, Scott Oak, I need a towel. Come on here. I can't go through 2 years without one." But for me, getting that towel, and obviously, you know, the first time I got in coach's corner, it was a huge deal for me.
So, do you still play at all, Shane?
You know what, boys? I don't. Obviously, I live in Newport Beach, so
yeah.
I play a lot of golf, but I told my boys from high school that once I retired, I'd play one men's league tournament with them. So I played last year in Port Hope and Coburg, and honestly, boys, I was so bad out there that I got a lot more respect for men's league players. They're better than they look, and I hadn't been on the ice in a year and a half, so that's the last time I've been on the blade.
So the last time, the question I was going to ask you is if you thought you could step into any beer league game across Canada and dominate, but I guess the answer is no to that.
Well, I mean, I could dominate in the locker room with the boys after. I could put a dent in the cooler, that's for sure. But no, I would just, I'd give you the stay-at-home defenseman presence. You know, I wouldn't be jumping the play. I'd be reliable for you boys. I'd be an asset to the team, but no, I don't think I'd be dominating, though.
Believe me, before this interview even started, I had zero doubts that you would be a tremendous asset in the locker room. But I could picture you back there surveying things, snapping breakout passes. We played in a tournament a couple of years ago where each team kind of got assigned an ex-pro. And, you know, you name it, Scott Walker is out there embarrassing guys with his hands. Like, I really don't think people give you guys enough credit. So I have a feeling your embarrassing is a little different than ours.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely slow the game down out there for the boys going D to D, and I could maybe get the center to swing back and keep it nice and easy. But you know, it's one thing living in Canada, right? If you're an ex-player, you know, I do miss guys. To be honest with you, I do miss, you know, being in the locker room, the guys, even if it was a men's league team. You know, that's what hockey's all about. And I'm sure if I lived in Canada, I would play. You know, just down here in Newport, I'm not that close to a rink, and my buddy's golf, so it's one of those things. But if I ever move back to Canada, I'm sure I'll be. Yeah, I'll be joining anything soon.
So, it's funny, you're just mentioning one of those tourneys, and we played in it up here. It was Scotiabank. It was for Alzheimer's, a great tourney, and you get a pro. And I went up against Mike Koska, who played for the Leafs for a little while. I don't know if you know him at all,
yeah.
Shane. But
yeah, I do.
Like, I'm a below-average beer league player, but I got decent hands. And I was coming in on him, and I thought, like, you know what? I'm going to pull a toey on this guy, go around to the outside, say I dangled a pro. In one motion, he stripped me with the puck with one hand and hit a guy with like a tape-to-tape saucer over like two lines, and the guy went in and scored. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Maybe that's why you're Mike Koska and I'm a guy who has to pay $600 a year to play hockey.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely don't think I'd be getting dangled one-on-one or anything like that. But when I did play that tournament, I tried to, not that I was the most offensive guy to begin with, but I would try to do some offensive plays, like beating guys that I used to be able to do. And I'd like lose the puck and like fall over and stuff. I'm like, wow, I should just stay back and play defense and just be an outlet guy. So I'm a stay-at-home defensive even in the men's league nowadays.
Yeah, I'd want to see you go full Merrick Malik though in the shootout. You still got that. It's like it'd be nice to see you embarrassing guys. One thing we did want to ask you about, we know you're a big golfer. You've sneaked it in here. We also love golf, and obviously living up here, we are itching to play, and who knows when that will happen again. I know you've played Pine Valley before. That is one of the most exclusive tracks in the world, best or often second best ranked. How'd you get the invite there? What was it like to play, and could you kind of compare it to any other courses that some of us might know?
Yeah, you know what, Pine Valley, it's unbelievable track. And a lot of my buddies here at Big Canyon are members. A couple of my buddies' dads were members from way back in the day. So we met some guys, and actually it was Scotty Upshaw who played in Philadelphia who became really good friends with the general manager of golf there. And we actually went out meeting
what a connection.
Upshaw and Lupo, and we played with the head pro's kid. And it's a tough track, boys, but it's beautiful. It's unbelievable. And the second course I put up there that I played on the East Coast is Shinnecock. We went and played that. But I played Shinnecock boys coming off a long night in the Hamptons the night before, so I wasn't exactly firing all cylinders, but it was a great course.
What'd you shoot at Pine Valley? Because I watched a YouTube flyover of that today, and Jesus,
it's hard, man. You can't miss the fairways there. Like the bunkers, they're all like they're not raked. They're all just like waste bunkers, and they're deep. And there's little rocks in there. So, I mean, if you hit the fairway, it's gettable. But if you're like me and you leak a little oil here or there, you know, you're making six or seven quickly. I think I shot a smooth like 87 or something. And I putted pretty well. I beat Lupul, so that's all that really matters to me. So.
Yeah, I mean, that really is all that matters.
I got in Lupul's pocket, so it was all good.
There you go. I love the sounds of that. So let's get a little, you know what, we're here. Let's get a little scouting report on your game. It sounds like you can get a little wonky off the tee. And then if you feel comfortable, I'd love to know what Joffrey's like around the links.
Yeah.
The scouting report.
For sure. So my game is, I used to not be able to hit a driver at all. And then obviously with these new twist face, TaylorMade, I mean, anyone can hit them. So I'm a decent driver of the golf ball. The best part of my game, I would say, is my long irons. I hit a pretty good iron. Not a very good chipper. And then I used to be a really good putter. And then, I don't know, boys, the last 6 months, she's gone real cold on me. So, but my putting is pretty good, but my long iron play is what keeps me going. And my boy Loops, he's a great driver of the golf ball. Horrendous iron player. Decent chipper, and now he went to the claw. He used to be the world's worst putter, and now he went to the claw. And he's before the coronavirus outbreak, he was putting lights out. So, but let's be honest, me and Loops, the best thing about us is riding the cart with us. We're two good guys to ride in the cart with. We got the tunes going, a couple cocktails. We're always having a good time.
So I guess here's a great question. Who's the most famous person you've played golf with? You've bumped elbows with some famous people. What's your best foursome?
Yeah, so this is great. So Freddie Couples is a member at Big Canyon, and I've always been a huge Freddie Couples guy. Like, so when I first joined Big Canyon, I saw him on the range and stuff, and obviously didn't want to go up and say anything to him. And one day, me and
he knows who you are, of course.
Well, we show up to the course, and our one buddy's like, "Hey, you guys are gonna play with Freddie today." And this was 2 or 3 years ago, boys. So my game at this point, I'm like a 7 now. I was probably 11 or 12. Like, I wasn't great. I was slashing around a little bit, and I'm like, wow, I'm playing with Freddie Couples, and couldn't have been a better guy. Loves sports, loves hockey. Coolest guy you've ever seen on a golf course. So I've ended up playing with him, you know, quite a few times now, probably 15, 20 times. Great guy. And, man, Freddie Couples, what can you say? Coolest guy going.
So, I mean, does he just shoot in the 60s every time? Like, how good does he look? Like, is it spectacular, or is it just consistent up close?
This is a great story. So we were playing Monster Day. Me and Ryan Getzlaff were partners, and we played in the same group as Freddie and this other guy from our course. And Monster Day boys, they put the tees all the way back as far as they can, and they put the pin placements in basically legal spots, like on ridges and on corners. Like, so anyways, Freddie goes out and shoots 65 on the Wednesday. But that Friday, Tiger Woods had our course record at 59. Freddie shot 58. So that goes to show you, man. He still hits it over 300 yards, and he makes it look really, really easy.
That blows my mind. Breaking a Tiger Woods course record with a 58 when you're nearly 60. That's that's incredible. Yeah. Is there any course that you? I don't know where to go with this. I'll go here. Is there any course you haven't got to play that's on? I mean, we know Augusta. We'd all love to do that. But other than that, is there anyone? I've heard that you love Pebble. We all love to. We all see it. We love it there. But is there one course you haven't got to play yet that you'd love to give a crack at?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, Augusta is somehow I got to meet the right person. Hopefully, somehow find my way on that course. But for me, you know, I'd love to go over to you know, Scotland and England and play those courses, St. Andrews, Carnoustie. You know, I hit the ball low, boys. I keep it low, so I'll be a good wind player.
Stinger.
And Bandon Dunes out here in Oregon is supposed to be unbelievable. But you brought up Pebble, and honestly, boys, if you have one round of golf to play, Pebble Beach is it's as good as it gets.